Hello and welcome to the call. I'd like to give you a little information about how the call will work and then we'll get started. I'd appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the star then 6 button on your phones, and that's everybody except the guests, so that we can mute all background noises. At the end, I will take a few questions, and at that time, I'll ask those who have questions to please push that star 6 again so we can hear you. The format for the call is simply that I will interview our medical experts, Dr. Horn and Dr. Miller. Are you there?
Yes.
Good. Okay, when we're finished with the interview, I'll open the line for questions. So let's get started. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Dotsie Bragel, founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at nabbw.com, and boomerwomenspeak.com, which are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I'm passionate about educating and empowering my generation of women, which happens to be boomers born between 1946 and 1964. Since launching Boomer Women Speak 5 years ago, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis, and I dedicate a great portion of my time to creating opportunities that inspire women to explore their passions and really live life to the fullest. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Me Again Products, which are tried and true products for women at midlife, and they can be located at meagainonline.com. We're also sponsored by Sunfleet for those interested in digestive health, and that can be located at plumsmart.net. We're sponsored by Dolans.com, so if you're interested in excellent financial information that will encourage you to live a more financially responsible midlife, which is really important right now, we recommend that you visit their site, which is Dolans.com. And then our last sponsor is Elations, which is a daily drink supplement that offers relief from joint aches and pains, and it's an alternative to taking the big horse pill, so all you have to do is drink it. It's a juice, and you can find that at elations.com. Okay, if you are not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join is typically $75, but through, Friday night, you can join for $50 because we're celebrating 6 years online for the Boomer Women Speak .com site. If you're interested, just email me at dots@nabbw.com, and I will send you the reduced link to join. This teleseminar is being recorded, as are all of our teleseminars, and then they're also transcribed. So if you don't like to listen while you work or play online, you can print them and read them at your convenience. And when joining the association, there's approximately 50 teleseminars that are available, and they're on all topics concerning baby boomer women. Okay, this call is just one of our free educational opportunities once you're a member of the NABBW. All right, let me get started by introducing Dr. Horn and Dr. Miller. They are our midlife health experts at the NABBW. And they met on the first day of their fellowships at the Johns Hopkins Hospital in 1983. For 3 afternoons every week over the next 2 years, they had sour coffee, greasy food, and long chats at the hospital cafe. Despite their being on opposite coasts now for most of their medical careers, their talks have continued for the past 25 years. Those girlfriend-to-girlfriend conversations between the two boomer women physicians actually inspired this book. Since the first of the talks after they met concerning Robin's misdiagnosis of her own symptoms, which she mistook the sensation from the then-new technological advance of the heated seats in your cars, she diagnosed herself as having the onset urinary incontinence. But anyway, from talking about that many years ago to their more recent chats, which have been about how to balance a full-time career with a marriage and 2 rowdy teenage boys, that's Robin, or the same career with a marriage and a rowdy live-in mother, they began to realize that the topics of their conversations are similar to other women in midlife and beyond. They know from their own experiences and from that of their parents what the most pressing health-related questions are at this stage of life. Such questions unique to this generation of women as, do I still need a pelvic exam after menopause? Absolutely. Can I still get sexually transmitted diseases? Yes. Should I have a hysterectomy to avoid cancer? Not necessarily. Is it really true that more women die from cardiovascular disease, meaning heart attacks and strokes, each year than from breast cancer? Yes, it is. Is becoming senile or demented an inevitable consequence of aging? The answer is no, and that one surprised me. Okay, since vaccinations are for kids, do I still need any? The answer is yes. And since I've smoked cigarettes for so long without a problem, is there any reason I should still try to stop? And the answer, of course, is absolutely. In trying to address these and other issues, it became evident to the authors that the currently available general information on aging, physical as well as psychosocial, is not always applicable to this unique and individualistic generation of women. So their book covers the spectrum of the maturing women's health issues in the 21st century. And I have to say that I have read their book and reviewed it for a magazine that I write for, and I've got to tell you, I was most impressed. And in addition to that, it was laying on the bed one day, and my husband picked it up and was glancing through it. And he also commented on what a good book he thought it was, so I just thought I would throw that in there. We have my review of their book, which is actually on their website, and their website is www.smartwomenshealth.com, and you can visit them there, and you can submit questions through the site, can't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, so do you all have anything to add to that? Do you want to talk about your practices, you know, the fact that you see mainly women when you practice or anything like that before we jump into the questions?
Well, I'd just like to say that, you know, one of the things in our book that we talk about in addition to, you know, conventional medicine is complementary medicine as well, and what kind of scientific evidence there is to do some complementary medicine, be it acupuncture, massage, or taking supplements.
Okay, and that's important because I know myself from seeing medical doctors in the past, a lot of medical doctors do not recommend or suggest those things unless we ask. So I like the fact that you are broaching all approaches. And to me, that's a very boomer thing to do because the boomers really aren't always necessarily going the traditional medicine route. Isn't that right?
That's right. And as you say, a lot of doctors don't know about it, so they don't ask about it.
Right.
And people may be doing a lot of things and not realizing that it may be interfering with some of the conventional treatments that they're doing.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask people who entered the call late to push *6 so that we can mute all background noises. I think I hear somebody's dog barking in the background just a little bit. Okay. Why don't we get started, and then hopefully we'll get through these questions and be able to take some other questions at the end. Would you mind telling us about the Women's Health Initiative study on estrogen, what that was all about, and why it was so important?
Yeah, the Women's Health Initiative study actually was done to look at the effects of hormone replacement therapy on bone health and preventing the risk of colon cancer. And in the process of doing this study, they found that hormone replacement therapy for certain women may increase the risk of heart disease, stroke, and breast cancer. And what needs to be understood about this study is that it was a double-blind study where women with a uterus were either given Premarin and Provera, which is estrogen, a synthetic estrogen and a synthetic progesterone, or a placebo. And the ones without a uterus were given Premarin or a placebo. And they chose women specifically who'd never had a hot flash. Because what they thought was that if women didn't have hot flashes, they wouldn't know whether they were on treatment or placebo when they were placed on the hormones.
Hmm.
The women's average age was 63, so many of these women were out of menopause over 10 years. And many of them had cardiac risk factors such as high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and they smoked and were overweight. Now, these risk factors were controlled, so they were on blood pressure medicine. They may have been on statins for their cholesterol. But nonetheless, many of them had risk factors. So, of course, when they started these women on their hormones, they may not have had hot flashes, but what happens when you put women on hormones who've been off of them for 10, 15 years?
Mm.
They bleed.
Oh, my.
They had periods, so they knew they were on the treatment, many of them. And so a good number of them dropped out, actually. I think 40% dropped out from the onset, the ones who were on the treatment.
Right.
And then there was an increased risk of heart disease and stroke and breast cancer, which is why they stopped the study early and published their results and sent alarm bells throughout women all over the country who just quit taking their hormones without really looking at what the study was all about.
Yeah, and now why wasn't all of that, I mean, like, that's all very new to me. How come they got away without telling us all of that?
I don't know. It was very sensational. And, you know, the media will just pick what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't well explained. And then they subsequently reanalyzed the data and found that those women who were on hormones who were younger, who had, you know, within 10 years of menopause, had no increased risk of heart disease. In fact, they had a little bit less. So I think it matters when you start the hormones, number one. I think it also starts what kind of hormone you're on. Premarin and Provera are both synthetic hormones. They are not bioidentical. When they've done studies on women who've gotten bioidentical hormones in France and England and gotten the estrogen through the skin and balanced it off with natural progesterone, there was no increased risk of blood clots. There was no increased risk of heart disease or stroke, and there was a minimal increase of breast cancer. The other interesting thing is those women who just got Premarin alone because they had no uterus had no increased risk of breast cancer either. So one would wonder if part of the problem was the Provera or the synthetic progestin, which is not natural progesterone.
Now, when you say they got it through the skin, is that a patch? I know of the cream, but how else would that be?
Yeah, it could be a patch, like I take the Vivel Dot patch, which I love,
mm-hmm.
Or it could be cream.
Okay. Well,
the cream you get from a compounding pharmacy.
And is it important that you have a certain mix, or is it the same cream for everybody?
No, the creams could be different for each person. And what I do is I check estradiol levels to see how much estrogen women are getting. So I usually like to keep the level between 50 and 100. And just enough so there's no hot flashes and so that there's some degree of protection for the bones.
Okay, now can you say that again? What level is it that we should ask our doctors to check?
Between 50 and 100 is the level I shoot for.
But what is the test? I'm sorry.
Oh, it's estradiol.
Okay, and can you spell that?
E-S-T-R-A-D-I-O-L.
Okay, and that's the name of the test that we should ask for to get what our level currently is?
Right.
And then we take that number to someone who makes the cream. Is that right?
Well, your doctor should be able to prescribe it.
Okay. And then they would just know what dose cream they should prescribe for
right.
you.
What I usually do is start off at a real low dose and then gradually increase it and follow the levels.
Okay. And is it possible to use more of the same dose and that would make a difference, or do you need to get the next, a different cream with a higher level?
It depends. You know, usually you can just use more cream.
Okay.
It usually comes in a syringe, and they'll tell you how many lines of the syringe to use.
Okay. Very cool. I've never used that. Okay, now
taking the opposite tack, excuse me,
sure.
Nancy, Robin is all for the estrogen, and I'm not, because I think that, I am for certain people, like Robin, who have the appropriate risk factor profile. I think you really need to talk it over with your doctor or clinician, but make sure that he or she is really up on the study and on the current recommendations, because I think, you know, if there's a very strong family history of breast cancer, you've had your mother, sister, or several people in the family with it, that might be a reason why you wouldn't want to go on it. Same thing with if there's an early history of early heart disease, or just other individual factors in each patient may make it so that you really should not go on it. So it really should be discussed. This is not, I don't think Robin meant that as a recommendation for everyone out there.
Okay.
She meant it didn't you, Robin? She meant it
yeah.
as if you have gone through all of the, you know, you're having bad hot flashes, you're fairly young and just into your menopause, and you know that you're not going to take it forever, then that's very reasonable. On the other hand, there's still some women that shouldn't take it that actually used to have it recommended to them.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be an individual approach,
mm-hmm.
But I don't want women to be afraid of hormones if they're miserable. And for people like myself and my mom, who's high risk for osteoporosis, who has a history of colon cancer that's, like, incredibly strong in her family, it makes sense to be on those hormones. But for other women, it may not, especially if there's a family history of breast cancer. I would not recommend it to somebody.
Okay, so risks of HRT would be breast cancer in the family, and then you also mentioned early signs of heart disease. Any other risks?
Family history of heart, a strong family history of heart disease.
Okay.
Family histories vary. You know, if you had a great-grandmother, that's one thing. If your mother had a heart attack at age 50, that is something completely different. So it's very strong family history. If you have several of the constellation of risk factors for heart disease, such as you know, very high lipids, like the bad cholesterol and just total cholesterol and LDL, or you have very brittle diabetes. Some of these things, you know, you'll be using the estrogen mainly to get you through the symptoms and also to protect you from loss of bone. But it's not worth the risk from the estrogens to potentially make the other things going on with you worse. So it really needs to be discussed with your primary care doc or your gynecologist.
Okay, now, can you throw moods into that? If someone becomes very moody, does the HRT, can that be helpful for moods also?
Well, yeah, because, you know, a lot of times when women are going through menopause, the hot flashes keep them awake all night.
Right.
And when you're tired, what happens? You get moody.
Right.
Moody and irritable. And the other thing that happens in menopause, which most women don't realize, is one of the most common symptoms is joint aches, achy joints, achy muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make you really irritable, too. So, yeah, it can help your mood for sure.
Okay.
Just ask my husband.
Okay, well, what about then the benefits? Because I know it's good for people to prevent, like, osteoporosis, but what are some of the other benefits?
Well, it helps with the irritability, the joint aches. It helps your skin.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to prevent vaginal dryness.
Mm-hmm.
It helps your bones, and it's been found to help prevent or decrease the risk of colon cancer. And that actually is what that study was looking at. That was the initial goal. So it's found that as well.
Dotsie, you had asked before, like, what are some of the things that if you have, you should avoid it. Actually, the chapter in the book really goes into that in really great detail. I mean, we really have put down who we think should take it, what questions different people should, you know, what questions different women should ask depending on, you know, what their own histories are. So there's a lot of information there, plus some recommended reading websites.
Okay, that's great.
It's
so, you know, for any of this, more detail is definitely in the book. Do either of you have a dog in your home?
I do, and should I?
Is she barking?
Yes.
Okay, well,
why don't I change phones?
Okay, if you can do something that would help, that would be
okay.
great. But
I'm
if not, don't worry about it.
Go to another phone. I'm going to try this. Okay.
Okay, but you'll have to call back in again, right?
No, she's probably going to just put it on hold.
Okay. All righty. All right, well, let's move on to another question. Do you have anything else to say about HRT? Benefits, risks?
No, but there's a great chapter on it where we go through the Women's Health Initiative study, and Janet and I go back and forth about our differences of opinion.
Yeah, and that's something that is really great about the book. If you haven't read it, at the end of each chapter, the doctors have a conversation with one another about the chapter and the issues, and I just think it's really, it makes it very personal, and I like that part of the book. I thought it was great.
Well, the other thing, too, is, you know, that not everyone agrees.
Right.
In medicine, there's no right way. It's really about the individual. And I think that the good part about the book is it kind of brings that out.
Yes, yes. And you kind of have to do what works best for you. And if you're not finding it, keep going, right?
Exactly. And if you don't find a doctor that's working with what you want, then find another doctor. That's what I think.
I agree. Okay. Anything else you want to share about that before we move on to something else, which is a huge topic?
Yeah.
Does weight gain or being overweight really affect your health and how? And I have to tell you, this is a very big topic in the forum communities at BoomerWomenSpeak.com. And not just being overweight, but the whole idea of exercise and what exercise and how much of each kind and, you know, how many times a week, et cetera. Women are doing so many different things when it comes to exercising. But I guess the biggest thing is that we need to be careful not to become overweight. So do you want to tell us how that affects our health?
Yeah, you know, the thing that's frightening is that we, our generation, may be the generation that lives the longest.
Right.
Because of the obesity epidemic. Mm-hmm. Obesity increases the risk for heart disease, stroke, and even some cancers like breast cancer, ovarian cancer, gallbladder cancer, colon cancer, you name it. It's not a good thing. And so it's really important that we attend to our weight, that we eat healthy, and that we exercise. And so, Janet, are you back?
I'm back.
Oh, good. So it's a huge issue in our country, and I think that for our children, it's a big issue as well.
And it is more important now that you lose weight than it was when you were younger, because the reasons have really changed from, you know, when you're the younger you are, the less prone to a lot of diseases you are. There are many diseases, most of which Robin just mentioned, that as you get older, you're more at risk for them, like several of the cancers, like heart disease. Just having another birthday puts you more at risk. So when you're younger and have a weight problem, it's a matter of, it's especially to us women, aesthetics and can you button those jeans or not. But as you get older, it really is a matter of your life. I mean, it's really a matter of staying healthy and, you know, having the last third of your life be enjoyable and not peppered by a lot of sickness and having to take a lot of pills. And even just losing a small amount of weight does a remarkable amount of good for different, you know, different body systems. I think Robin mentioned all the really severe, serious, the heart disease and diabetes and the cancers, but also obviously weight contributes a lot to osteoarthritis. So those knee joints lugging around a lot of weight, they're going to be much more painful than they would be if you lost just 10 pounds. So it's really important now. It's not just a nice thing to do anymore. It's really a must.
Okay, and do you have, what chart do you recommend? Because I know that there used to be some type of life insurance chart that had, like, your height and your weight and what was a good weight.
Generally, I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's not as accurate. What's generally used these days is what's called the BMI, or Body Mass Index.
Mm-hmm.
Body Mass Index, there's a kind of, it's not too difficult of a formula, and it's in our book, but what it is it's a relation of your weight to your height, and it just figures it out with a specific formula that you can just plug in your numbers and see. And basically what's recommended is a body mass index of 25 and below is normal. I mean, of course, you can get too thin, and we talk about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But over 25, you're overweight, and then over, I believe it's 30, 35
yes.
is no, obesity. 30 is obesity. And so, you know, you can tell exactly where you are on that. I mean, your weight may not be that high, but for your height, it may still be too high. So that we recommend just looking at, if you look at your body mass index, almost all of the health recommendations today, and the risk factors for diseases are based on what your body mass index is.
Okay, now, Robin, do you hear the static in the phone? You do. And I think it's when Janet got on the other phone.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, Janet. But I'd rather have the dog bark on occasion than the constant static.
Well, I can actually go back to the other phone.
Do you mind? I'm sorry to do that, but I really
I'll
hear a lot of
I'll
static.
Go back.
All right. Okay, thanks. Okay. Isn't this crazy? But it's really okay. Okay, so can you address why it's more important that you lose weight at this age than even when we were younger?
Well, I think it's important at any age, to be honest with you, because kids are getting adult illnesses now.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it really matters when you become more fit or reach your ideal weight. But it becomes more important now because you already have maybe risk factors on top of what's going on with your weight,
mm-hmm.
and that will accelerate disease.
Well, I can share that I know some people who have gotten like their cholesterol counts lately, and their doctors have wanted them put them on medication. And they've said, "Oh, please let me just try this on my own." And they try to lose weight, and they change their diets, and the cholesterol number really changes. So,
mm-hmm.
I like it when doctors work with you, and I do a speech on the top 10 trends for baby boomers, and one of them is like working with the doctors and not just going to the doctors. And I know I went to a doctor once, and I had like a little water weight gain in my feet, but I think it was from like walking in the hot, humid summer. And she was ready to put me on a fluid pill, and I was like, oh my gosh, I really don't want to do that. So. I think that, you know, we really need to speak up with our doctors and you know, go to doctors that will work with us. And I believe that, you know, the less medications we can be on, the better, as long as we can control what those medications were supposed to be for.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And so that's why I really work along with my patients to try and get their weight down, increase their fitness level so that they don't need to be on drugs.
Right. Right. Now, are there any drugs or over-the-counter things that you recommend for weight loss? Or do you just say, no, you need to exercise more and eat less?
That is part of it. But, you know, there are certain types of foods and diets that are more helpful both for bringing down your risk factors and helping you to lose weight, such as the Mediterranean style of way of eating. And I really love the Mediterranean diet.
Okay, can you tell us that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's whole foods. It's rich in fruits and vegetables, olive oil, whole grains. It's just a healthy diet.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done countless studies showing that it can help lower cholesterol, help lower blood pressure, and help you lose weight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you don't prescribe or suggest using anything, what is that big thing right now? Is it ALI or what is it?
ALI, which I think is miserable.
Okay.
What they don't tell you about that is the way that works is it just sits in the GI, in your gut, and prevents fat from being absorbed. So there are two issues there. One, you have to take in a certain amount of fat in your diet. And
mm-hmm.
two, what happens when fat isn't absorbed? You have diarrhea. So when it first came out as a prescription drug a couple of years ago and I tried it on patients, most everyone I've tried it on told me that they would rather, you know, they would just rather exercise an extra hour a day than take it. It was like no fun. I guess some people do okay with it, but
mm-hmm.
you have to know it's not particularly comfortable. In answer to your question, I almost think there's never a reason to go on a pill for diet to lose weight, because I think you can do that yourself. Everything from I think the most common thing people will say, and then I know I have myself, is there are times when I just can't control my appetite. I'm starving. I just can't not eat. You actually can control that yourself if you decide you're going to cut out carbohydrates for a couple of days, and you would be absolutely surprised that a couple of days later that that extraordinary hunger is really gone. And I think when you take pills, all the pills are artificial, you know, artificial chemicals. Why should we rely on those when we can, you know, if we really put our mind to it? Nobody says it isn't hard. It is hard. But if we really put our mind to it, we can lose weight, you know, ourselves.
Okay. We actually talk about one weight loss, sort of weight loss pill in our book, which is the Korean pine nut oil.
Mm-hmm.
You take it about 15 minutes to an hour before you eat, and it helps you to feel full and also decreases the hunger level.
Mm-hmm.
So there is one in our book, but it's
that. That and actually the other one that I talk about that really worked for me, and as a, you know, sort of as a, just kind of informally telling some friends of mine to do the same thing. I think green tea works like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an extraordinary amount. It's not just have a cup in the morning and go your merry way. It is really drinking it all day. And I think, of course, it's the fluid that fills you up and makes you not eat as much. But I just found that I did this a couple years ago, and it was, you know, I sort of wasn't even watching that closely what I was eating. I was just eating healthily, and the weight just really came off with, you know, with it's a couple cups in the morning. If you get hungry, you just always have some green tea ready, and I prefer the actual tea to a pill because, the fluid in it fills
mm-hmm.
you up. But there are studies coming out saying that green tea may help weight loss, but I mean, just anecdotally, I've seen it work. So that's an easy way and a very healthy way.
Okay, and is that with or without caffeine, or does it matter?
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
What I actually do is mix it up. So, you know, early in the morning I'm doing caffeine, but by late in the evening, you know, the green tea I'm drinking is caffeine-free.
Okay. Okay, anything else about carrying extra weight?
Well, exercise is really important,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, exercise is one of those things that's hard for many people to do because we're all very busy on our computers and using our cell phones and not moving as much as we used to. So I think that it's really important to find something that you do that you can actually incorporate into your life. So if it means taking the stairs at work or gardening or cleaning your house yourself or taking your car and parking it like several blocks away from where you need to be, that's probably the best way to try and get exercise if you're one of those people that doesn't exercise a lot. And then the other thing that's important after menopause is to do some form of weight training, because what will happen after menopause is we lose muscle mass. You lose muscle mass, you lose your ability to burn a lot of calories. And so it's very important to do some form of weight training. It doesn't have to be, you know, a lot of it.
The interesting part about the weight training also is for years and years, the weight training type of exercise was thought of by, you know, the exercise gurus, particularly the cardiologists who are looking at exercise benefits on the heart. Weight training was thought of as its own separate thing. Okay, this helps your muscles, period. And you had to do cardio to help the heart. Now, about a year ago, it was the summer of 2007, we have this in our book, the American College of Cardiology and the American College of Sports Medicine, which is the orthopedic doctors, came together with a set of recommendations, which, interestingly, the government just adopted about a week ago and are going to put out. But their recommendations, they said for the first time ever that weight training could be considered as good as aerobic or cardio, meaning it makes sense, the heart's a muscle. So, you know, training, doing lifting weights and doing strength training exercises is just a really good overall exercise for one to do. We actually mention in our book four different types of exercise we think are important at this age. I mean, as we're getting older, the two we've talked about are obvious, or cardio or aerobics and weight training. Then there's a whole set of balance exercises because we want to learn to keep our balance so that we prevent falls. Falls are terrible for as you get older. Everybody knows someone who was doing great, and then she fell, and just her health went downhill after that. We really have to avoid falls. So for balance exercises, it's kind of what you might think it would be. It's a lot of the exercises that concentrate on your core, which is that central area of the body. So that's like Pilates and yoga, mm-hmm. and actually like Tai Chi. And there's a lot of like little gym equipment that can help you do balance exercises. And then the last one, the fourth type, is flexibility, just to keep yourself, you know, flexible, able to, you know, bend up and down and move fairly easily. And those exercises are stretching and pretty similar to the balance exercises. One last thing I'll say is what Robin was saying was so important about exercise. We mentioned one study in the book that actually showed in older people that it was more important that they exercise than that they get their weight down. I mean, for health purposes, we're not saying don't lose weight, but we're saying, you know, if your weight is sort of borderline, it was more important. The people were healthier who did regular exercise and maybe were a little heavier than people who were heavy but did, you know, who were a little bit lighter but did no exercise. So exercise is really crucial. It was a real surprise to me in researching this book about, you know, it's now being proven to do all the things that we were always told that it did.
Sure, and then it also lifts the spirits, too, the whole
Absolutely.
Serotonin thing, which I think is so important.
It's actually...
Like regular exercise helps just as much as Zoloft for mild depression.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that impressed me the most, because, again, in the book, you'll see, Robin is a real exercise machine. She's one of those people who will just make you sick because she loves to do it, and she does it well, and she's done it since she was 2 years old. And she's really good. Well, I've always hated it. I actually really like strength training. It's the first exercise. I really think that's fun. But for cardio, I'm not so wild about it. And then when we were researching for the book, there were just starting to come out studies about the beneficial effects of exercise on memory
mm-hmm.
and preventing dementia. And you sort of say, oh, my God, you know, if I can do something that easy to keep me from losing my memory or becoming demented, I mean, who wouldn't do it? I mean, that was a real wake-up call.
Yeah, and especially for the all of us boomers who are watching our parents with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Absolutely.
It is extremely frightening, and it's a huge topic, I know, online right now anyway. I often get articles about boomers and Alzheimer's. 1 in 8 boomers are going to have Alzheimer's. I know we're going to get to the whole memory loss thing, but let's finish up with the exercise piece and move to heart disease, and then we'll get into some of the memory loss and senility, et cetera. Okay, because we only have like 20 minutes before we take a couple questions. How are the symptoms and signs of heart disease in women different than in men?
Well, you know, some women get the classic male symptoms, such as, you know, the elephant sitting on the chest, pain going up the arm, or down the arm, up the neck, sweaty, sick to the stomach kind of stuff. But most women don't, and they may just have overwhelming fatigue, shortness of breath, dizziness. I had a patient who went to her dentist twice in one day because she had such severe jaw pain on one side.
Hmm.
And she called me, and I did an EKG, and sure enough, she was having a full-blown heart attack.
Hmm.
So there, you know, can be just sort of vague discomfort. It could be indigestion. There are all kinds of kind of vague symptoms. When they looked at women who'd had heart attacks and they looked back on the month prior to the heart attack, they found that there were many warning signs that women ignored. So if you're feeling really off and you think that there's something wrong, there probably is something wrong and it should be checked out. And if you think you're having a heart attack, don't go to the emergency room. Call 911 because you'll get taken care of much more quickly if you do the 911.
Hmm.
And in terms of the heart, time is muscle. So the quicker you get taken care of, the quicker you'll be able to protect your heart muscle before it's injured. So it's crucial. And then the 911 people will probably have you chewing an aspirin if you're not
mm-hmm.
allergic to aspirin while they're getting there. there's some wonderful programs in the country right now where cardiologists are ready and waiting when patients get there from the ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
Most hospitals strive for that. If you're in an area where there's multiple hospitals, you need to find out which one is the one that where all the cardiologists are. You want to get taken to a special hospital that specializes in cardiac care. That's crucial. So,
what about the factors that can put us at risk for heart disease? I know we've talked about weight. What else?
High blood pressure,
okay.
Diabetes. There is some afforded protection before we go through menopause, but you lose that when you smoke and you're diabetic. So those things really accelerate the chances that you'll have heart disease. So it's high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
It's a strong family history of heart disease. That's in a parent, especially a parent at an early age, having had a heart attack. And stress can do it as well. And women who are hostile, angry, they're at increased risk of having heart disease.
Well, I've heard that.
Did I miss any of the risk factors?
No, but you should mention smoking more, because we had mentioned early on when Dotsie was reading those questions about, you know, if we're this age already, does it help to stop smoking? If we smoke this long, why stop now? It's crucial.
Yes, and actually the minute you stop smoking, your risk starts going down for everything.
Absolutely,
heart disease, cancer, you name it. The minute you stop, the risk goes down.
Okay, anything else about heart disease before we move on?
Yeah, let me just say something really. Oh,
go ahead.
Something really quick, and that is, we tend to neglect ourselves. We put ourselves at the bottom of the list, and that's why I think some women don't recognize when they're having a heart attack, because they just have to keep on going. They have to do whatever it is they have to do. And I think that it's very important to put yourself number one on the list, to listen to your body, and that if you think something's wrong, something's not right, you're probably right. And listen to your intuition.
Okay, well, let me ask. I know at 50, I just turned 50 this year, my doctor, I had to have a colonoscopy.
Yay!
Is that bad?
No, I think it's a great thing to do.
Oh, okay. But is there
a... It's great you're going to do it.
I already did. Is there a good time, or is there an age where you should have a stress test done, or
that's
like an EKG or anything like that? Is there anything that should be done?
We actually talk about that and give
mm-hmm.
the last chapter in our book is what we call a roadmap, and it really goes through every single thing we think you ought to do, kind of at what point. So at 50, absolutely a colonoscopy, but if, in fact, you have a family history of heart disease and or one of the other risk factors, you should probably have gotten a stress test even before 50. And if at 50, you don't have any risk factors at all, at the very least you should get an EKG. But, you know, at some point we both think it's good to have, to have on the record a stress test just so that if 10 years from then, there's a problem, you can look back and say, well, I was fine, I had a baseline and I was fine at 50. So, again, it's one of those things that depends on your risk factors.
Okay, and I mentioned that because that chapter, which you're referring to as the roadmap, is an excellent chapter.
It's the last chapter,
yes.
Chapter 15. And the the problem we had was that, the book was actually twice as long as it came out. We had to cut a lot because of the page limit that our publishers had us working with. And so the last chapter gives little blurbs about some topics that we think are really important, such as depression and domestic abuse and sleep. Not that we think they're less important than the other chapters, but we just ran out of room. So that's part of the last chapter. And then the majority of the last chapter literally goes through each and every organ system and what you should have had by, sort of what age. I think we don't always agree with the official recommendations. I think, like, for instance, a lot of the official recommendations say you need a bone density scan when you're in your 60s, and both of us got them at age 50 and recommend them for our women patients in the early 50s, just so we can get a jump on, you know, where the bones stand. But everything from dental care to eye exams, that becomes crucial after mm-hmm. 50, that you're getting yearly or every two-year eye exams, to stress tests, to colonoscopy, to you name it. We go through and give very specific timings.
Okay, let's see, because we're starting to run out of time, and I want to definitely address the memory loss issue. So why don't you tell us, are memory loss and senility a normal and unexpected part of aging?
Absolutely not, and that was a big surprise to us, too. I think that word senility or senile we've all used forever, it's just a completely useless word because it really doesn't mean anything. We've all known a 90-year-old woman who was completely with it. You know, good memory, could tell you what happened to her 20 years ago, could tell you what happened to her this morning. And that's the proof that not everybody actually, that getting senile or losing your memory is goes along with aging. But there are things you have to do to help that along, too, which we've talked about, one of which is regular exercise, and two is the healthy diet and the foodstuffs that help the brain.
Well, what about, I know now there's a lot of talk about the brain games that people can play, you know, the Sudokus and just
very
doing
good
crossword puzzles, and gosh, now even Nintendo has some brain power game for boomers, and there's quite a few things like that being talked about in the media.
And that's exercising the brain. I mean, you not only have to exercise your body so you get more oxygen to the brain, but you need to do those. I think the traditional things that used to be thought to do best for the brain was learning a new language and crossword puzzles. But I know that Sudoku?
I get that mixed up, too.
Whatever.
Sudoku.
It's really good. And I've seen a lot of the brain games. We recommend in the book one that we thought was sort of neat. It's at freerice.com, which is little game, little puzzles and questions, and basically
mm-hmm.
what you do when you get it right is it gives so much money to overseas to feed people who don't have food. So it's kind of a neat little game. It's freerice.com. But the thing is, you should be doing that every day, just like you do your body exercise.
All right, well, what are the types of memory loss that we should be aware of?
The classic kind that I think we all get at this age that we get so, so upset about is that it's the multitasking, and you're doing so many things at once, and then you can't remember where you put your keys.
Right.
Or you park your car and you go upstairs and you shop and you do all this other stuff and then you can't remember where you park. And I think so many women, I know I do, get so frightened by that. I mean, that's pretty frightening, especially when you're used to having this steel trap of a memory. But the truth is that as we get older, the ability to multitask goes down a bit. You can prevent that again by doing mind exercise, brain exercises, and regular exercise. But the second part of it, there's an overlay of anxiety. So I noticed a few years back when I would forget something or I would walk out of a movie and want to talk about it and couldn't remember the name of the movie, I would get so anxious, then that anxiety would overtake everything and I could never remember.
Sure.
We talk about in the book that, you know, when that happens, when you forget something, just let it go, just kind of smile, laugh, let it go, and I absolutely promise you it will come back into your brain, you know,
right,
in a few hours. The other kinds of memory loss are the recent memory loss, such as people are so frightened of with Alzheimer's is actually much more of a problem learning something new, meaning if you were to show an Alzheimer's patient what time it was and then 10 minutes later ask her what time it was and she didn't remember it, it's not a memory problem. It means she really didn't learn it in the first place. And the second part about memory loss with Alzheimer's patients is generally they are not aware that they have a memory loss. So you're usually in pretty good shape if you know that you've forgotten something. And I think when we all get so anxious, we know, like, where are my keys? What's my address? That sort of thing. You're aware that your memory isn't as good. It's when you are not as aware of it that it's really that it really becomes a problem. But again, in the book we say if you're really having an ongoing problem that's bothering you, you should bring it up with your primary care clinician, and you can do what we call a mini mental test and sort of see where you are, and we use that as a baseline. Or you can have some studies just to reassure you that everything's okay. But don't just sit and worry about it.
The other thing is if you have a family member or a friend who you think might be having Alzheimer's, go with them to the doctor.
Absolutely.
Because they won't know that they have a problem. They'll tell
right.
the doctor everything's fine, like my mother-in-law.
Yeah, like my father-in-law. I certainly understand that. Okay, just because we only have about 5 minutes, let's move on to nutrients and you know, how do we go about getting them from vitamins or foods, or you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's certain supplements that I would recommend. One is vitamin D, because most of us don't have enough, and I think it's so important. We talk a lot about vitamin D in the book. Vitamin D is important for absorbing calcium into your bones, but it's also important for other things, for regulating blood pressure, for keeping you from being off balance, to help with muscle aches. And because we all use sunscreen now, you can't absorb it through the skin.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't get much in our diet. And most of us are just not adequately, we don't have enough adequate vitamin D. So I actually recommend that all my patients get their vitamin D level checked, actually find out how much you have.
Okay.
And then supplement based on what you need.
We actually put that in our roadmap, that that's one of the blood tests you need to specifically ask for.
It's really important. And, you know, Janet and I both checked everyone else's vitamin D levels, and then we checked our own. We were the lowest.
And it's amazing because we both said the same thing without really talking to one another about it. We both actually felt noticeably better in general after the vitamin D. I mean, that's not touted a lot, that you're tired or worn out or sort of, but it really made a difference.
And quick. It's fast.
Okay,
yeah.
And what other nutrient? You mentioned that there are two in particular.
Well, calcium is also important.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get enough calcium usually from a regular vitamin. But before you start taking calcium, you need to have enough vitamin D so you can actually absorb the calcium.
Right, right.
If women are on a statin for lowering their cholesterol, I think they should also be on coenzyme Q10 because it helps to prevent muscle problems, and it helps to strengthen the heart muscle as well.
What about if they're not on a statin, just in general?
Even then, it's probably good. It's not going to hurt, and it's a good thing because it just helps with general muscle health.
And
fish oil is something that I recommend to most of my patients as well.
What do you look for in a multivitamin, Robin?
Well, a multivitamin, you want to get, you want to have enough B vitamins, at least 400 micrograms of folic acid. You want to have some calcium. There's probably a little bit of vitamin D in most of them, but not enough. Selenium is one of those things you can't normally get in your diet unless you love Brazil nuts. If you eat 3 Brazil nuts a day, you can get enough selenium. And vitamin A in the form of beta-carotene. You don't want pure vitamin A. You don't need pure vitamin A. You want it in the form of beta-carotene, which is what you find in carrots. And
Robin goes over this in excruciating detail in the book, too, about what to look for. You know, all multivitamins are not created alike. So the one you're taking may not have what you really need in it.
Right, and that's the good thing that I mentioned about your book. I mean, it's a great book. You can read it from, you know, cover to cover, but it's also good to have as a resource and just pick it up when you're curious about, you know, any one of those topics in particular.
Well, right. That's what we want. That's what we were aiming for.
Well, really, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, we have to move on because we only have a few minutes. And one of the women in the forums wanted to know about women who've had hysterectomies and choose not to be on HRT any longer. On the other side of 50, what do they, what might they expect long term?
In terms of what?
I guess, let's see, they've had hysterectomy, they're not on HRT. What can they expect long term? I guess she's talking about, like, are they missing anything by not being on the HRT? Do they need to worry about bones or...
It depends on also if they had their ovaries out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big... If they didn't, at the time they had the hysterectomy and it was just the uterus, we also... I'm sounding like a broken record, and I apologize for that, but we also talk a lot about how important it is to know what kind of surgery you've had, because mm-hmm. I know a lot of us just go in and say, okay, do it, and come out and not really sure. If your ovaries are still intact, then... you're going to go through menopause at the time you would have gone through it had
anyway.
You still had your uterus.
Right.
If your ovaries come out, then, Robin, you can take it from there.
Yeah, then you can choose to do HRT or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're young and you have your ovaries removed, I would recommend at least being hormones until the normal time you would go through menopause.
Right.
And then just withdraw from your hormones because, you know, it's important for your bone health and your heart health. Up until a certain age.
Your bones, especially if you're young, I mean, you really need to be, somebody needs to sit down and talk to you about calcium and vitamin D and exercise.
And the other thing is if you're young and you get your ovaries yanked, you know, ovaries make testosterone as well. So oftentimes I've seen people who've had their ovaries out young and their libido's out the window. And so not only do they need estrogen and progesterone replacement, but they also need testosterone.
Okay.
And it really is, you know, can be life-changing.
Okay. Now, let me just see if anybody on the call has a question, and if so, they need to push *6 if they've already done it to mute themselves. So let's see. Sometimes it takes a couple seconds for people to come through. Does anybody have a question before we finish off with today's topic?
Yes, Dottie, this is Pat Burns. How are you?
Great, Pat. How are you today?
Hi, Pat. Doing well. Thank you. Ladies, you're doing a great job. I love the passion behind information. It's truly there. It's just been like I've been hit like bam, bam, bam last week with everything you've been saying and every event I've been going, and also looking at my recent birthday pictures. I have got to lose weight. It's just like, ugh. So I wanted to ask you if you would please recommend your book, name, title, website again, because I came on after your introduction.
The website is www.smartwomanshealth.com. It's woman's, W-O-M-A-N-S, no apostrophe. So it's smartwomanshealth.com. And the book is The Smart Woman's Guide to Midlife and Beyond. And we really do talk a lot about various things about losing weight and the like, because it's much more of an issue for me than it is for Robin, because she loves to exercise. So I can probably tell you every diet that ever existed. But at this age, it's got to come out. You really have to take it as more than just getting into your prom dress. You really have to take it as, you know, it's a serious health issue.
Listen, I just like to fit into the prom limo.
Pat, that was a good one. But you know the subtitle to their book, which I think is important, is it's a no nonsense approach to staying healthy after 50, and it really is. It's a great book, and I am highly recommending it to everyone. I took it to my book club the other night, actually. So
the other thing, we Pat, we write a column monthly or every other month or so for Dotsie's website. And, mm-hmm. you know, the diet issue comes up so frequently that
yeah.
I would say one out of three, you know, columns will mention something about it.
Great. Well, I'm an author, too. My book is Grandparents Rock. The
Grandparents. Oh, great.
Yeah, thank you. And
yes.
So I'm just at my computer all day long, and I've got my I start off with my walking clothes on, but I go to bed with them on.
You're exercising your brain so your memory will stay good.
Yeah, no, I got
to
look
at
to
get your butt up.
That's right.
You get a dog, but you have to walk.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
One that preferably barks when you don't.
That's right.
And Pat, let me also suggest a couple other things. Read their, you know, go to their website, get their book, and read the articles at nabbw.com. In addition to that, look at the weekly updates, because Gregory Ann Cox, who is a member of the association, is offering a program coming up for exercise and diet, just healthy eating, healthy living.
And
then
got
also,
a great background in nutrition.
Yes, and then also Janice Taylor is also coming up with a Christmas diet. So make sure you read your updates, because there's a
sure.
lot of good information in them. And I really love it when the women within the association support one another.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, if you have the discipline to sit down and write a book, which both Robin and I can sympathize with you, it's probably one of the hardest things we've ever done,
yeah.
then you can lose the weight. I promise you the book was harder than the weight loss.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, let me see if anybody else has a question, and then we're probably going to have to cut this off. Does anybody else have a question? You can push *6, and we can hear you.
Hey, Dotsie, this is Gregory.
Hey, Gregory.
Thank you for your little plug before.
Absolutely. Yes.
Hi, both doctors. I wanted to ask if you could, either one of you, have an opinion about the importance of leptin. Is it going to be more in the news? Is it, you know, a passing fad? Do you really think it affects all of our systems?
You know, I don't know. One of my friends was in one of the leptin trials.
Yeah.
And it didn't help her at all.
I see. It's just sort of up and down. It becomes really popular for a while, and then you don't hear anything about it.
Uh-huh. Can you tell us a little bit of what it is, please?
Yes, and spell it. Is it L-E-P-T-I-N?
Right.
It is.
Okay, and do you want to tell us what it is?
I'll let the doctors, and
Robin.
Let them do it.
Yeah, well, it's a hormone that helps you to lose weight when it's secreted. And so the trials were, you know, giving people leptin hormone to see if it reduced their appetite. And, you know, I don't know, you know. I still think it's going to come back to the basics, eating healthy and exercising.
Which is the, you know, we both really, and we hadn't talked about this at all before we started writing about it, was we both really love the Mediterranean diet. I mean, I guess you have to have a taste for that kind of food, but
uh-huh.
it's the first kind of diet I've ever been able to like, stay on long-term, you know, off and on the Atkins.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mediterranean diet is, like, good. I mean, it tastes good. It's good food.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a book? Because, you know, I'd never heard of that until you mentioned it on the call earlier.
You know, I don't even know if there's a book out for it. It's always sort of mentioned in the literature. Cardiologists talk about it a lot.
Ah, okay.
It really is just what you think it would be. It's eating,
right.
You know, the only thing different about it that you can't really do is the pasta or the carbs in the bread, but it's the rest of it's fresh, it's whole foods, it's not processed, it's a lot of fish, which gives you that fish oil, it's nuts, grains, a little bit of wine, and olive oil, and
okay.
you know, I just have found like the olive oil or on a pasta or anything you can sort of do that's got that sort of Mediterranean flavor, it really keeps me satisfied, so...
And I'm sure if anybody's interested, they could Google it, and I'm sure they'd come up with something.
There'd be a gazillion, absolutely.
Right.
There'd be a gazillion references.
Okay. Okay, let's see if we have maybe one more question. Does anybody else have another question? You have to push *6 if you already muted yourself. Is that another question out there? I don't think so. Okay, let's just go over the web addresses again. The doctor's web address is smartwomanshealth.com, W-O-M-A-N-S, health.com. They also have many articles on our site at nabbw.com. You can order their book through the site or through Amazon. Is that right, ladies?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or your favorite independent bookstore.
Yes. Okay, there you go. And do you have anything else you want to add before we sign off?
I think it's a great, my favorite part about getting older, and this is the honest truth, is I love the group of women that I'm getting older with. I think it makes it much more fun, and I think that we all just need to turn our attention to ourselves now instead of putting everybody else first.
Oh, I love that.
It's important to trust your gut, too.
And to trust your gut. That's right. If you think something's wrong, then more than likely it probably is, and just keep going until you figure it out, right?
Exactly right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all of your expert advice, and I highly recommend your book and hope that if you're on the call and you haven't read it, that you would take a trip out to the store or go online and get this book, because it will answer a lot of your questions and really be a great resource for you in the future. All right, thanks for being on the call,
thank
and
you,
have a great day.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.